So hello there. My name is Shankar. Can everyone hear me? Yeah? Okay. So this is the I don't know which module. I mean, I don't know. I know which module it is, but I don't know. I don't know which number module it is. I think this may be the fifth or the sixth one in the series, I think. Something like that. Yeah. So this is the one about relating to a spiritual teacher. So that's what we're going to be discussing, I guess, over the next few weeks. And so maybe I won't do too much of the logistics now. We'll do it at the end. But basically, it runs until, I think it's 5 weeks. It runs until May 20th, if I'm not mistaken. But usually what I do is, there is a practice that I hand out, and I hope that most of you will come and, you know, learn it or do it with me, because it actually is what brings the benefit, you know, studying. Anyway, we'll go through all that. But in any case, so that practice we'll probably do on a Saturday morning. Maybe one of the classes we won't do on a Monday night, but just on a Saturday morning, 10 to 12, something like that, we'll just do just a practice. Because it's kind of hard to do it at the end of the day. And, in an hour and a half, I mean, because there's explanations and you're going to do it a couple of times, there's chants and things like that, you know. So it's kind of, takes a little bit of time to learn it, you know, that kind of thing. But if it's something that you can do at home is when it really brings the most benefit. So anyway, we'll over the next couple of weeks, we'll discuss that. The other really fabulous thing about this time around, this module, is that on May 2nd, Venerable Thupten Chodron, who is a, oh boy, she's been a nun for maybe 30 years, and she is one of the original students of Lama Yeshe, who is one of the founders of the tradition that the center belongs to, and his picture is up, you can't see it very well, on the top right over there. People over there probably can't see it. But in any case, she's written quite a few books. She's a very accomplished practitioner. She started an abbey in Washington State. So she is wonderful. So she will be here during that week. And so she's actually going to be teaching the class here, and I'll be sitting with you. So for that one day on May 2nd. So that'll be a really wonderful thing. So we don't know what she's going to talk about yet, but we'll figure it out. But I'm sure she can do a much better job than I can. Any case, so the books. Well, there aren't any. Well, there's only one required reading for this. Is the Discovering Buddhism, you know, the little teachings by Lama Zopa, right? That's in the Discovering Buddhism CD. I guess that's how they give it out now, right? So that's what we'll use. If you are further interested and excited and really want to get into it, there is a wonderful book called The Heart of the Path by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is also one of the founders of our tradition. And it's very readable. It happens to be a little long, but it's like a meditation, basically. You know, it's really wonderful. So anyway, it's out there. I just wanted to bring it in to show it to you. So if you're interested, you want to pursue it further, it's out there. And that's about it for the logistics for now. So why don't we start by doing a short meditation, maybe for 10 minutes, to settle our minds. And by the way, I have to apologize. I'm recovering from a bad cold, so I'm not contagious anymore, but I will be coughing a lot, and I'll try to cough, you know. I apologize for that in advance. So, okay. So we'll just do a short meditation and just to clean out our day. And then maybe just short practice on impermanence. So let's take a comfortable seat. However, well, you probably all know how to sit now because most of you have gone through the various modules. Does anybody here not know how to sit? It's okay if you don't. No? Good. Okay. So His Holiness instructs that you can take 3 deep breaths, and as you take the in-breath, you imagine you're filling a bottle it's like filling a bottle. So the air comes in, and you can imagine maybe white light as it comes in, and it fills the bottle from the bottom up, like you're pouring water into the bottle, and it's coming from the bottom up. And all the stale air rises to the top and comes out as you exhale. So all the stale energy, the stale air, the cares of the day, the worries, everything. So let's take 3 deep breaths like that. Then after that, you can maybe focus on your breath or in a visualization, however you wish. Try to see if you can find that stillness. then we can think about maybe how things are always changing. There is nothing that ever is in stasis. So there's a wonderful short verse from the Vinaya Sutra, so we can go line by line and meditate on it. So it says, collection ends in dispersal. So you can think about how we gather possessions, people, friends. We get attached to so many different things. But it never lasts. It gets dispersed. Maybe someone takes it away from us. Maybe our health that we have tried so hard to, going to the gym and so forth and so on, it deteriorates. So like that, everything we collect ends up being dispersed. Then rising ends in falling. So we can rise up our careers, become powerful politicians, become rich. Gain a lot of respect from people. You know, people hold us in high esteem. But then we can think of a lot of examples where the rich and the powerful and the high somehow don't seem to be able to stay there. Then meeting ends in parting. So maybe make new friends, but then they turn out to be not so nice. Or we get married and the marriage dissolves. Relationships. And then finally, birth ends in death. Even if we are able to keep all our collection, we've been able to stay at the top. We've been able to keep all our friends and our relationships. Final dispersal will happen in death. We won't be able to take it with us. friends will be of no help. Our relatives will be of no help. Our family, our children, our money, our power, none of the mundane things in this life will be of any use at that time. So the only thing that will help is what spiritual attainments we have been able to cultivate in this life. Only that, only the Dharma will be of benefit to us at that time. So we can set that as our motivation for being here today. And for all the other Discovering Buddhism classes that we go to. That we are on our spiritual journey. That we continue to practice and be able to make progress. Not just for our benefit, but for benefit of all the others around us. How to relate to a spiritual teacher. And so you already have a basis. I mean, the reason I did the impermanence and death meditation was most of you, I believe, are already familiar with the concepts, right? And it's a really good way to, you know, set the motivation for why we're here. Not just here, actually, physically, but why we're practicing in the first, why are we interested in the first place, right? And sometimes it's hard to know, remember why we're doing certain things. You know, we do our meditations, we do our mantras, we do this, we do that. But it's not clear why we're doing it. You know, it just becomes rote. And so it's always important to kind of go back and remember why we're doing it. And but in any case, so this is the one about the spiritual teacher. And by the way, you can ask me questions at any time. I will, you know, I have a cheat sheet somewhere here of five things that I wanted to cover today. But, you know, I may not remember to stop and say, okay, are there any questions? So if you have any questions, you can stop me. And this module actually is a very difficult module, I think. I don't know about you, those of you who have already gone through it once. But because it's not just book knowledge, you know, to really get it, you know, you can read all the texts, you know, you can learn all the points, you know, the qualities of the teacher, the 10 qualities of the teacher, the benefits of having guru devotion, the disadvantages of not having guru devotion, how to see the, all those things, right? So there, all those points are there. But there are a couple of things that make it difficult. One is that we have to overcome our own internal obstacles, which is one thing, our presuppositions that we have, preconceived notions. The other thing is, maybe even more difficult, is to get an experiential understanding, right? To really make it, to internalize it. So to have an experiential understanding of what it means to have guru devotion, relating to a spiritual teacher, but I mean, this module is traditionally it's called guru devotion, how to devote oneself to the guru, right? And I'll talk about what a guru is, and that's what most of this module is about anyway. But there's a reason why in the stages of the path to enlightenment, the Lam Rim, as some of you know, this is the first thing that Lama Tsongkhapa and Pabongka Rinpoche, they talk about is guru devotion. You know, this is the Lam Rim. This is one translation of the Lam Rim. And there's three volumes of this, basically. That's the whole Lam Rim. But the first, 100 pages are basically about guru devotion, right? So that's 100 out of maybe 500 total, right? Which is a significant amount. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is, and we'll talk more about this, but the reason is that without an experiential understanding or real internalized belief in the truth of it, one makes only so much progress on the path, on the spiritual path. If one wants to make significant progress, then one has to have, the correct attitude towards the guru. And that's considered a prerequisite. So that's why we have our own obstacles to guru devotion, but then we also don't make the effort. I include myself in that. I have gone through periods where I knew that I didn't have, my practice was rather dry and limited, and it was because I wasn't really focusing on that guru devotion part of it, right? And so that's why to have an experiential understanding of guru devotion, that also is not easy, right? So it's not just book knowledge, right? So that's the two things that make this module difficult to really get it. But anyway, the other modules are a bit easier because they're more logical. If you're learning karma, for example, right? You kind of learn, the causality, and if you're generous, then you'll be born wealthy in the next life, and et cetera, et cetera, right? All those things, and about ethics and so forth and so on. They seem more logical, or death and impermanence or things like that. I find guru devotion it requires more faith, in a way, and it requires more openness, I guess, because one has to open one's heart. And that's not necessarily easy. So, but on the other hand, it can be done, right? So that's the good news. So they say that, so one of the first things that they talk about when relating to a spiritual teacher is about the three vases, right? So it's important to kind of go over it, when we're thinking about this. Is the, when you go to a teaching, for example, it's always good to kind of notice, to kind of think in our heads, what is our mindset like, And they say our mindset can be one of three things. It's kind of like trying to fill a vase with water, or with clean water. So let's say that, if the vase is, first there's a cracked vase or a vase with a hole in the bottom, right? So no matter how much water you pour in it, it'll never fill because it just keeps draining out the bottom, right? So it's kind of like going one ear and out the other, right? So that's like a lot of times when we go to a teaching, it's kind of like that, you know, we're kind of like there, but we're not really listening. So then they say, then there's a second one, which is that cracked vase. The upside down, that's right. I was thinking about the third one. Yes, thank you. The upside down vase. So the upside down vase is where this is where it's also, you know, this is actually becomes relevant for guru devotion that I was talking about. Is that we have already made up our minds, right? So we already have some preconceived notions. The vase is already turned upside down. It's not right side up, right? It's not open. Our minds aren't open. So it's already covered up. And so if you pour water into it, it's just not going to go in. You're never going to fill it, right? So that's important to remember. So when we go to teachings, whether, you know, Geshe-la's teachings or His Holiness's teachings or anybody else's teachings, it's important to kind of think about whether our minds are open or not. Because a lot of times we'll hear things that may not make sense, that may not be intuitively obvious to us. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're not correct. It may mean that we have to think about it a little bit more. We have to meditate on it a little bit more. We have to have a more of an experiential understanding of it to really get it. So we can, and if it doesn't make sense, we can set it aside. We don't have to just throw it out and say, okay, this is just, you know, BS. We can just set it aside and say, okay, well, I won't worry about this for now. I'll come back to it later on. Maybe it'll make more sense. So that's kind of an attitude we can have, right? And the third one is a vase that already is, you know, this right side up and everything. But it has dirty water in it, right? So if we already have doubts and it's, okay, so then you try to pour water, you know, clean water into the vase with the dirty water in it already, it's not going to be full of clean water, right? Still going to be dirty. So it's like that, where if our minds are, again, it's kind of like similar, if our minds aren't open and we're just, you know, we're already always questioning, that's a good question. Questioning in the right way is a good thing. We want to question. We don't want to just accept things just because somebody's saying so, right? That's one of the fundamental tenets, if you will, of Buddhism, right? The Buddha himself said, don't accept something I say because you have respect for me or you have faith. You can accept it only after you think, consider it, and really understand it for yourself to be true. So it's important to question. But then a lot of times we question already with an attitude that with a hypothesis that we have already built into our minds, right? So that's what the vase with the dirty water is, right? So we already have our doubts about what we're hearing. We already have our notions of what does this guy know, you know, that kind of thing. So it's important to kind of remember those three things when we are hearing about the Dharma. And, you know, when we do have a guru and we're listening to him, it's important to kind of think about how we are listening. You know, so that's I go through this exercise every time I'm at a teaching. I kind of think about which vase my head is in, you know. And it's interesting. A lot of times I find that, what am I doing here? I already heard this thing before. I already know this. Why am I here? You know, kind of those kinds of feelings. So, yes.
So there must be a fourth vase.
Which is the correct one? Oh, yeah, they don't talk about it.
Right.
Those are the three incorrect vases, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, they don't talk about the good one, you know, the clean, perfect. It happens so infrequently, I guess, maybe. I don't know. In our minds, in our ordinary minds, it happens so infrequently. Maybe they don't discuss it because of that reason. I don't know. So, So when they talk about, you know, the real question is, why do we need a spiritual teacher? Right? I mean, that's the bottom line of this part of the Lam Rim, of this part of the Discovering Buddhism, right? We have to really kind of understand, do we need a spiritual teacher? And if so, why? I mean, why is it important? Because, you know, everything's written down already, right? I mean, there are all these texts, there are all these scriptures, the Buddha's words from 2,500 years ago. There's volumes and volumes of the Pali Canon and the Tibetan Kangyur and the Tengyur, which are up there. So they're all written down, so we can just read them, right? And we are pretty smart people. You know, I mean, Geshe Lo says in America, you know, everybody's pretty much educated, you know. They can read, they can write, they can think, they can discriminate. So we can kind of figure it out, right? I mean, and not only that, in the Lam Rim, I mean, there's a stages of the path, right? It tells you from zero up to all the way up to enlightenment. It tells you how to get there, right? Every single step, it tells you what to do at each step. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like it's rocket science. So it's interesting like that, you know. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, you know, it was funny. He said this once. He said that when he was young, and I don't know what he meant by young. Does it mean his teens, 20s, 30s? I don't know exactly. He said when he was young, he thought that, you know, reaching enlightenment it shouldn't be that hard. He should be able to do it. I mean, this is what he's saying. Now, I mean, I think most of us believe that he's a Buddha, so, you know, he's kind of saying this to, I think, make a point, but nevertheless, you can take it for you can take his words for what you think it means. But he said that, you know, when he was young, he thought that, you know, it shouldn't be that hard. But he said as he got older, he realized it gets harder and harder. It gets farther and farther away. And because the more we understand our nature, and the more we understand, about how we are, our nature, how we see things, you know, about all the different mental delusions that we have, you know. So the more we understand, it's like, you know, the peeling layers of an onion, right? They just never seem to end. They're just more layers, one after the other. You know, you go through a couple, then you find more. You go through those, you find more. And it's interesting, you know. So the Lam Rim basically tells us how to get there from 0 to 60. I mean, it totally has it, right? The problem is that what it doesn't give us is how to really make it our own, right? It has the words. It's like, you know, it's like going to Wikipedia, or not Wikipedia. If, you know, let's say that we have an ailment, right? We have some sickness. And we look up whatever. You know, you go to the internet and you look up, you type in the search engine, right? And you get a bazillion, you know, entries, right? And you go through the first 10 and you're kind of totally confused because there are about 10 things that could have the same symptoms, and they all say different things, but they all seem to be correct, right? So It's like, so it's like, you know, we can read the words, we can understand what they're all saying on the web pages. But the question is, how does it, you know, they're talking about it in terms of, you know, general terms, right? So this, all these symptoms, when they're applied, you know, when they're applied to like 1,000 people, it could be this, right? But those symptoms, when applied to us, could be something totally different, right? Each of our bodies is different, right? So if I have, you know, a couple of different symptoms, and you have a couple of, you know, Joey has a couple of different same symptoms, we could have two totally different ailments, right? So it's like that. We can read the words, we can understand what the words say, but if we don't have a medical degree behind us, we won't be able to make any sense of it, right? So what do we do then? We go to a doctor, right? Who is what? A guide, right? I mean, when it comes down to it, how many of us go to a doctor and, you know, when we have a problem, how many of us go to, and, you know, we go to a doctor and we just assume what he's saying is correct on faith, right? I mean, do we go look at his degree and see what GPA he had, what his friend said about him, and whether he's any good or not, or none of that stuff, right? He says, oh yeah, try this and, you know, have an, whatever. You know, he gives you some prescription and you just assume that it's going to work and you keep moving, right? So, you know, we have guides all the time, right? Maybe a doctor is a guide. We have other guides, like, for example, you know, when we, I don't know, our teachers are guides, right? If we go into college or going to school, you assume that what the teacher is going to tell us the correct things, that if we learn what he says or she says, that, you know, we will do well and get the degree and et cetera, right? So, and it's the same reason that we need a teacher, right? We can read the words, we can memorize it, but we may not be able to actually apply it. And, you know, so there are examples, you know, mundane examples of guides, right? But I expect that most of us who are here because we're interested in something bigger, right? It's not because we're not here because it's going to make our careers better or it's going to make us more knowledgeable. We're here because we feel in some way that there must be a better way, right, in our lives, right? That's why most people engage in the spiritual journey, right, in spiritual endeavor, right? And the spiritual, you know, this work is probably the hardest work we would ever, ever engage in, by far. You know, if you consider the amount of, you know, mental anguish, physical pain that we go through on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, right? And if we understand the reasons for it, as they say it in the Lam Rim, you know, we can see how much mental delusions we have created, which is really the causes of all our suffering. Right? And these mental delusions aren't just a year old or a couple of years old or 10 years old. We're talking countless lifetimes of delusions. You know, there's just a gigantic amount of crud, really, that we have accumulated. And so why would we expect this work to be easy? And so that's what His Holiness is getting towards. You know, the more we understand, the more we realize how difficult it is. And if we try to embark on it by ourselves, we will get lost very, very quickly. You know, we can read all the scriptures, we can read all the books, but they're just words. You know, they won't go into our hearts, because that's where the problem has to be attacked. The problem is not, you know, in our brains. It's in our minds, in our hearts. And to attack it in our hearts, you know, just book knowledge, just reading the words doesn't make any difference. It requires a lot of, not just knowledge. I mean, it certainly requires knowledge. You know, we have to know the subject matter. We have to know how we got here, right? But it also requires a great amount of faith, but faith is, you know, it's kind of a difficult, there's different kinds of faiths in Buddhism, and the faith that they talk about here is, you know, what they call like educated faith. Faith that after you have questioned it, you then you discover that it's the truth. You know, that's the type of faith. It's not faith just because somebody said it, so, you know, I'll accept it. Not that kind of faith. It's not shallow. It's very deep faith. So, it requires a lot of knowledge, but it requires a lot of faith. And to make that all the Dharma accessible, right? They say the only way to do that is through a guru. It's the guru. By the way, guru means, it's a Sanskrit word, there are various different meanings of it, but the guru basically means the one who is full of sublime qualities, basically. You know, the one who is weighted, you know, weighty. The gu comes from the root that means weighty, you know. So the weight, you know, weighty with, you know, heavy with sublime qualities. So, and sublime qualities here means spiritual attainments, basically, right? So the one who can make these teachings accessible to us, to make it personal, so that we can make progress, right? So that it's not mere book knowledge. You know, there is the guru. I mean, by book knowledge, I mean, you know, there are lots of people who know a great deal about Buddhism. You know, you'll find them in academia, for example. They like write translations. There are lots of professors, researchers, historians. You know, they've written lots of translations of the scriptures, the commentaries, and so forth and so on, right? They have a lot of book knowledge. But they have not brought it into their hearts. So they would not, you know, so one would not consider them true spiritual practitioners. You know, so it's not just knowledge that one must have. One must make it experiential, right? And the only way to make it experiential, to convert that all the words into actual meaning, is through someone who has been on the path, who has been down the road, who knows what the pitfalls are, who knows the direction in which to go, who can guide us in the right direction. Because there are many ways of going in the wrong direction. We may still get to the right place. It'll just take us a lot longer. You know? So that's why it's kind of like, you know, if you were going to the Amazon, you know, you would ask for a guide, right? Somebody who's actually gone, or going up Mount Everest, you would ask for a Sherpa who's done it before, right? And so that's why the guru is so important. And And we'll discuss this more in later classes, but you know, the guru is basically considered an embodiment of the Buddha. And you know, one way to think about that is that we weren't fortunate enough to be born when the historical Buddha was alive, right? I mean, there are lots of Buddhas, by the way, right? Even now, existing. There are lots of Buddhas. When we say the Buddha, we mean the historical Buddha, the one from 2,500 years ago. So, so you know, we weren't fortunate enough to have been born during that time, because all these stories about, you know, so-and-so met the Buddha and the Buddha gave him some teaching and suddenly he just got enlightened, right? Just because, and that's not a joke, because, you know, that person who got enlightened probably had been working on it for God knows how many lifetimes. So he just had, you know, he needed that final step of the final teaching from the Buddha to make the final step, final, you know. So we weren't fortunate to have been born then, to have really come across the Buddha, to have made that incredible progress so fast, right? But the Buddhas, you know, all have made vows, right? That their vows are that if anyone needs any help, they will always be there to help them, right? In whatever way is the most benefit, right? That's their vow. I mean, they have the ultimate bodhicitta, compassion, right? So that's their vow of bodhicitta. So, you know, we weren't fortunate enough to be born during the Buddha's time. However, when we are here, you know, trying to understand the Dharma, and we go to a teaching and we make that connection with someone who we really feel could be our teacher, right? One doesn't know whether the Buddha has manifested himself as a teacher just for you, right? And that's one way to think about why the teacher can be a Buddha. I mean, there are many other ways, and we'll talk about them. But the Buddhas can make many different emanations at the same time, right? Because they have omniscient minds. And so, if somebody appears in front of you to help you, he may very well be a Buddha. And so, like that, a teacher is because he is the one in front of us who is expounding the Dharma, who is telling us, giving us instructions, giving us advice, setting us on the right path, you know, helping us when we're down, encouraging us when we need encouragement, all those things, right, on our spiritual journey. So, you know, it's a really amazing thing. And so when we are able to see the benefit of the guru, you know, my teacher, for example, says, you know, it's like the blessings just come. You know, the blessings just come. And, you know, and actually one of the things I was going to say was that another example, you know, each of us has what's called Buddha potential, right? Each of us, sooner or later, one day, will become a Buddha. We all have the Buddha seed in us. But, you know, all seeds have the potential to grow into a plant, right? So you sow a seed. Just because you sow the seed doesn't necessarily mean it will become a plant, right? The sun has to shine, the rain has to come, the soil has to be somewhat fertile. You know, there are a lot of things that have to happen, right, for the seed to grow. So the guru for us, when my teacher says blessings come, the blessings are the sun and the rain, right? So when we have devotion for our guru, when we're able to see him as the Buddha, when we're able to follow his advice, when we're able to, you know, there are all these qualities that a student has. We'll go through them later. When we're able to really have that relationship, because, you know, when we're able really have to able to have that relationship, that's when the sun and the rain really shines and the seed just sprouts, you know, and just continues to grow and grows for lifetimes, right? One of the aspirations that, one of the aspirations that practitioners often make, you know, when the prayers they make is, you know, and it's in the guru, the guru puja, if, you know, those of you who have done it, is that may I never be separated from my gurus in my future lifetimes, right? So that every lifetime, whatever condition I'm in, I will always come, you know, I will always come to, you know, come to have that, continue that relationship, right? Because it's the most important relationship that we could possibly have. Because the spiritual journey is not just a journey of this lifetime. So it's not like, it's more, you know, this relationship is more important than any relationship that we've ever had in the past or the present or the future. You know, by relationship, I mean, you know, husbands, wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, friends, just, you know, whatever you want to call it, right? Because this is, you know, this relationship will make us go towards the ultimate goal, you know, the goal of ultimate freedom that just frees us from all the bondages that we have at present, brings us ultimate joy, brings us ultimate skillful means that we can help just countless beings be of ultimate benefit. You know, just amazing qualities, right? You can read them. But it's, you know, so that's the journey that we're on, really. You know, it's an amazing thing that we're on this journey. And so, you know, so it requires a guide who will help us on that journey, who is committed to that journey, who is not, he won't be distracted. He's not the kind of guy who's gonna, somebody's going to say, oh, let's go get a, grab a beer, and he's going to be off, gone, right? You know, he's not going to leave us, he's not going to leave our friendship because somebody better came along, right? Cuter, better, whatever. So, you know, so he will, you know, so that's what, you know, so he or she, but also, by the way, you know, he or she will be with us for the entire trip of our lifetimes, all of our lifetimes, until we can get there. Who has a vested interest in our success? And so, if we're able to find someone like that, and we will, then, you know, it's just, things just become a lot easier. You know, things just in the present become a lot easier. You know, I know that personally, you know, so I'm not just, you know, I'm not just saying this because the books say it, you know. The books do say it, by the way. But when one, you know, when, you know, but it also is true. So it makes a, there was something else. So anyway, so that's the reason why we need a spiritual teacher. And you know, the spiritual, and when we're able to make that connection, our hearts just automatically open. I mean, that's the amazing thing about it. You know, it's one doesn't know how closed one's heart is until one really can see, you know, one really has that understanding. I mean, one really has, when we do see it open finally. And and the spiritual attainments that they talk about, right? For example, you know, simple ones to hard ones, you know, the meditations, getting experiential understanding of the, you know, of the Lam Rim stages, you know, impermanence and death, karma, refuge, you know, the 12 links, all that stuff, right? All the meditations that are there. We can do those meditations, but when we have the, you know, we can do the meditations for a long time, but when we have that relationship with our teacher, somehow it just becomes so much more, it just happens a lot faster. It becomes easier to deal with the difficulties in our lives. Because, you know, as we all know, they happen frequently and constantly. So our lives become easier to deal with. And we have a better understanding. We are able to deal with things that come up with more equanimity, with less grudges, with less guilt, with less, I don't know, anger. You know, possibly with more compassion. So, you know, there's so many benefits, and you know, you'll read them in your Discovering Buddhism, those little little handout, you know. But I'm just giving you kind of a brief synopsis of what all those benefits really are and why we need it. No, actually, I don't know. I know what I was going to say. I thought, you know, I don't know how many of you saw that movie Lincoln, you know, that came out last year. And I thought one of the things that really stuck out from that movie was towards the end of the movie. I don't know, there was a name. Who was that senator from Illinois, or I don't know where he was from, but he was the radical left wing, you know, the guy who wanted to abolish slavery immediately, right? And Lincoln was going too slowly for him. And so there was a scene where, you know, they were having an argument, and Lincoln and this guy in the basement of, I don't know, the Capitol building, I think it was. And so, you know, so this guy was saying, you know, you were selling us out because I thought that you were with us, and now you are slowing it down or blah, blah, whatever it was, right? And so Lincoln said, in his folksy way, right, he said that, you know, a compass always points due north, right? So, you know, a compass always points due north, but it doesn't tell you where the swamps and the pitfalls are, right? So if you just keep following the compass recklessly, without, you know, thinking about, you know, without a guide in our case, but without making any, you know, you just follow the compass, you may not get there, right? So the shortest path is not, or, you know, in Lincoln's word, what he was trying to say is that you have to use your discretion, right? And just because, you know, so both Lincoln and this guy had the same compass bearing. But this guy just wanted to go headstrong. He was headstrong. He just wanted to go straight through. But Lincoln was saying, okay, we can still abolish slavery, but we might have to take some detours, right? And so that's kind of like the, you know, I was just thinking, I was watching the movie and I remember thinking, oh yeah, that's just like the spiritual, you know, the guru devotion thing, you know. Because you know, it's interesting. You know, the Lamrim tells us, it gives us the compass bearing. It totally gives us the compass bearing. It tells us how to do it, which way to go. Right? But it doesn't tell us where the swamps and the pitfalls and the mountains and all those things are, right? And the pitfalls are different for different people, right? Each of us has all these lifetimes of mental delusions that we have built up. So each of us is different, right? So we can't expect that each of us follows the same path. We will, exact same route, rather, that we will get there the same way, right? We have to kind of navigate around. And that's where the spirit, you know, the guide comes in. We have to have a guide. So, anyway, so that's why we need a spiritual guide. It's a short story long, I guess, is what I made it. But I hope it made sense. Yes.
Where do you go about finding?
Oh, I knew you were gonna. That wasn't my cheat sheet. That was the last thing. I will talk about that, but I will come to that. Actually, we can talk about it, so it's okay. So, there's different ways about answering that question. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, God, does this mean I need to find one right now? You know, I mean, I've had people ask, you know, not ask, well, I've had friends of mine ask my teacher, for example, you know, not ask me necessarily, but, you know, ask my teacher, you know, how do I find one? Or do I need to find one now? Because time's a wasting. And the answer, it's interesting. What the teachers say is that if we the guide won't just show up, right? In other words, you know, as an aside, I will tell you that Tibetan teachers, traditional Tibetan teachers, if you ask them to teach, they won't teach. You have to ask them three times, traditionally. You have to ask them three times, you have to request teachings three times for them to say yes, at least three times for them to say yes. Sometimes it may take more. And the reason is, they want to be really sure that you really want it. You're not saying it just because, you know, it was a spur-of-the-moment thing, you know, kind of, you know, felt like it. You were reading some book and you thought, oh, this might be interesting, so I'll ask the teacher to kind of, you know, give us a commentary. They really want to know whether you're ready for it. Right? I mean, if a teacher teaches and the students aren't ready, the teachings are not really all that useful. Right? I mean, the teacher can give profound teachings. Right? But if our minds are not ready to really be able to understand them, right, then there is no point in giving the teaching. So, like that, what they say is that to make that relationship with a teacher, one has to prepare oneself. And the way one prepares oneself, one has to make oneself ready to receive a teacher. And what one does is, you know, one studies, one practices, and one is patient, right? You know, we know there's, you go to teachings by Geshe-la, you go to different teachings, maybe by, you know, Venerable Thupten Chodron, who's coming, other teachers who come, you know, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who will come next year. There are many teachers who come, who give teachings, you know, we have books that we read. So if we study, if we practice, if we make our minds malleable, then when we're ready, we will find that teacher. But we have to. But the onus is on us. You know, the teacher's not just going to appear. And not because he doesn't want to appear. He does want to appear. But he won't appear because, you know, if he appears and you're just not ready, there's no... Actually, there's an interesting story, but I hope I can remember this properly. Some of you will probably correct me if I'm wrong. There's a story. There's a great Tibetan yogi from the 13th century, Milarepa, right? I don't know. I'm sure some of you know about his story. And he was a great, you know, he was one of the great Tibetan masters. And he had committed many, many really heinous crimes earlier in his life. He had killed a lot of people, enjoyed it greatly. And he had, you know, he still reached enlightenment in that one lifetime. So in any case, but he actually was practicing in this cave. He had been in this cave for 12 years, I think it was. Maybe 10 years, I don't remember. And he was been practicing, and he had been practicing, I think he had been practicing the, he had been doing the Manjushri, prayers to Manjushri, who is the Buddha of wisdom, the one with the sword, flaming sword. I don't see the Manjushri here. But in any case, he has a flaming sword above him, the sword that cuts through our delusions. Anyway, so, and so, you know, 10 years went by, and he got disgusted, I think, and he left the cave, and, you know, he went down there, went down, you know, down to the market, to the village, and I'm cutting the story short now. He sees Manjushri. Let's put it that way. He sees Manjushri and says, "Now you appear. You know, Now you appear. I've been doing this for 10 years." And so Manjushri takes him back to the cave, and he says, "You know," he says that. See that spittoon? Because there was a spittoon and Milarepa was spitting into that spittoon, right? And he says, "I've been sitting there as a spittoon for all these years. You just couldn't see me. You weren't just ready to see me. You know, you were spitting at me. You were doing all these practices. But you weren't, your mind wasn't ready." So finally, after he did all these 10 years of work, he had cleared all his occlusions, right? He was able to connect to that subtle mind at which you can, you know, you can communicate with the other realms, right? Then he was able to see Manjushri. So it's like that with the spiritual teacher. They are around us. But we're not, you know, I'll tell you a story, you know. My teacher is a, you may see him, you know, he said he might come next year, by the way, those of you who know. Venerable René Fussy, he's a Swiss monk. He's been a monk for, I don't know, 35 years or so. And so I knew him for quite a few years. You know, I knew him for, I don't know, 15 years maybe. I've known him for 15 years now. But I knew him for quite a few years before I was, you know, he didn't look like a teacher to me. You know, I mean, I had other teachers. You know, I could see Lama Zopa as my teacher. I could see Chodron Rinpoche as my teacher. But I could never see Venerable René as my teacher. So, you know, but I was doing my, you know, but it was only, and I was, my practice was kind of deteriorating. I was frustrated. It was dry. It wasn't working. I was having a lot of problems in my life in general. You know? And then, you know, suddenly one day I got this email from, there was a, I lived in California at the time, and the center I belonged to, I still belong to, Vajrapani, they sent out an email, and he was the resident teacher there for quite a few years. So anyway, so they sent an email saying, Venerable Rene is doing this class, you know, weekly class, you know, for people who want to come. And I said, yeah, okay, this sounds, you know, this, I want to do this, right? And I started going, and within a couple of classes, it was clear. You know, it. I can't say that it was because, you know, it wasn't magic. You know, but it was, but somehow over the years, as I had been doing, you know, my practices, however little I was doing them, and with what little effort and, you know, sporadicness and all that stuff, you know. Something must have something happened, right? Something changed in my mind. And I was able to make that connection. And so that's kind of how it works. But before that, I wasn't ready. I mean, I knew him. I'd been to his teachings before. I mean, well, no, I hadn't really been to his teachings before all that much. But I knew him. I'd seen him around. I talked to him. So it's not like I didn't know him, but it just wasn't, I wasn't ready. You know, so that's how it happens, you know. So we have to kind of be ready. We have to prepare ourselves and keep persevering. You know, I think it's really important. It's very important to persevere. You know, there is one of the six perfections. You know, those of you who know the six perfections. There's ethics. There's generosity. There's joyous perseverance. There's wisdom, compassion, and what's the fifth one? Sixth one. I always forget.
Patience.
Thank you. So ethics, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, wisdom, and compassion. Right? Yeah. So joyous perseverance, right? So we have to continue, you know, not just perseverance, okay, I'll do it because I have to and I'm told I have to do it, etc. But really wanting to do it, you know, to remember why we're on this journey, right? What is at the end, what is our end goal, right? And to continue to persevere. And if we persevere, good things happen. It's guaranteed. It always happens. And that's the beauty of it. You know, if we follow the Dharma, if we continue to persevere through good times, it's easy to, actually, it's hard to persevere through good times because you tend to kind of like, you take it for granted. You're like, okay, I don't need to do this. But then in bad times, you tend to not do it because, okay, I don't have time to do this. I'm too stressed to do this or whatever it is, right? But so if we persevere through good times and through bad times, good things do happen. And the good things are coming across a spiritual teacher, making those connections, you know, being able to gain spiritual, you know, spiritual attainments, having a calm life. All those things do happen. So that's, you know, one of the interesting things is that I was in a retreat. A couple of weeks ago, I was in California. I was on a two-week retreat, and my teacher was leading the retreat. And one of the things that I remember really stuck in my head was that he said, you know, the spiritual journey is like filling a bucket of water drop by drop. You know? So you can't say the first drop made all that much difference, or the second drop they made all that much difference, or the last drop made all that difference. What really makes a difference is a continuous drop after drop after drop after drop after drop. Right? That's what fills the bucket. It's not the last drop that has any more effect than the first. But if we continue to always fill the bucket, and we do it regularly, right, because water does evaporate, right? So if we continue to fill the bucket and we do it regularly, we will get there. We will make those connections. And their spiritual teacher will appear. You know, they've appeared for others in the past. They will appear for us. They may have appeared for us in the past, in our past lifetimes. Very much so. Right? But the good thing is that even if we continue to if we make that relationship, see, there's nothing, to make that relationship, to see the teacher as a guru, there's nothing on their side, right? There's no gain on their side. They don't gain anything out of it, right? Whether or not we see them as a teacher or to see them as a Buddha, whatever, it doesn't matter to them at all. It makes no difference to them, makes no difference to their karma, makes no difference to their lives. But it makes all the difference to us. And that's what we have to remember. So if we can, because it changes us, it changes how we think. It makes us want to be like them. It makes us inspired when we see our teachers. So that's, so those things, it makes us want to have those qualities. I want to be like him, right? It's kind of like how people say, when they had this wonderful teacher in school, high school, whatever, and they became a scientist because they had this great teacher who made this difference, right? I mean, that's the same way, right? Because that teacher inspired that person, right? So a spiritual teacher is just like that. You see him or her, you see where he is, you see the calmness, you see the their qualities, and you realize, okay, that's what I want to be like. And if he or she can do it, I can do it, right? And that's what also keeps us going, right? It keeps us trying to make progress, right? So there's all these benefits, and we'll talk more about it, but there's so many benefits. And so these are all the things that don't come from a book. Right? The book again just gives us the compass bearing. That's all it gives us. It's basically maybe 5% of the journey. The other 95% comes from the teacher. Or teachers. One has more than one teacher usually. So, yes.
If you were a relationship, it sounds more like, if you use an analogy, like more like a marriage than like dating. It's like, like in certain circumstances, like now you're physically located in Raleigh proximity-wise, it would seem like a good fit at Dayton. But you're still keeping the relationship up with the teacher in California. So you kind of made that commitment at that point. It's not like just based on proximity or...
Oh, absolutely, right. Well, there's this idea of, like you have a guru and a root guru, right? And, you have many, so you could, teacher or a root teacher, you could say, right? And so I have, let's say, 5 teachers. My teacher has like 30 teachers, he says, But we only have one root teacher, right? And the way it works is that, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, one time somebody asked him, maybe he just said it himself, what is a root teacher, And he said the root teacher is someone Well, he said, what is a teacher? And he said, a teacher is someone who points you in the direction of the path. Right? So teacher is someone who points you in the direction of the path. Now, so what that means is there are many people, many teachings we may go to where the teacher may not point us to the direction of the path, you know. Like if you go to a teaching that has to, you know, talks about the translation of the scripture or whatever, that's not pointing you in the direction of the path, right? That's still a talk about a scripture, but it's not pointing in the direction of path. But a teacher, I don't know. Maybe. But that's a teacher, right? Someone who points you in the direction of the path. A root teacher is usually, you have only, they suggest only have one root teacher. And a root teacher is someone who you have the closest relationship, to whom you ask questions for advice. You ask advice. Well, you ask advice about very, you know, like about, you know, what to do, what your goals are. He is the one who kind of takes you around the swamps when the compass bearing is pointing north, right? You go to all your other teachers. You go to their teachings. You consider them your teachers. You have an incredible amount of reverence for them. And you may even ask them for advice on very specific things. Because the problem is, if you ask for advice from too many teachers, they will tell you different things. And then you're going to be really confused. So that's why they say to have one root teacher. You can have as many teachers as you like. But they say have one root teacher because otherwise you just get really confused. So I don't know if I answered your question, though, or not. I kind of got stuck. You were saying the proximity and the marriage and...
Yeah, I think it's just like the fact that you have...
Okay, right. So once you have... Right. So once you have that relationship, once you create that relationship, it's very important to continue to foster that relationship. Right? To really continue to grow it. Again, it's all in us, right? It has nothing to do with the teacher. To him, it doesn't matter whether I consider him my teacher or not. Right? It's all up to, it's really for my benefit, right? So there are practices one does, and that's one of the practices I'm going to go through that I was talking about, right? There's a guru, usually they're called guru yoga practices. And where, that's how one continues that relationship, right? In our minds, but we're still continuing that relationship. Now, I talk to my teacher maybe once every couple of years. I don't talk to him very often at all. Because he's usually on retreat. He's like on a 5-year retreat now. So, you know, I mean, okay, I talked to him face to face. So when I saw him 2 weeks ago, that's the first time I saw him in about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, something like that. But, you know, he may respond to my email once every 6 months, something like that. You know, he'll open his computer once every 3 months and see what's going on, and then he'll turn off and that's gone, you know. So kind of like that. So he might respond to me, you know, I'll send him an email, maybe a couple months later I might get a response, right? So I don't have very much contact with him. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I don't have that relationship with him, right? So once you have built that relationship and you have the experiential understanding, really, you know, once you have that experiential understanding, then it's really easy. You know, it's basically, you know, you think about his qualities, you think about all the, how he has helped you, you think about, you know, all the, you know, his qualities, right? How wonderful they are. And you think about how you want to be like him. You think about, you know, all those things, right? And you make prayers and so forth and so on. And so the relationship continues, right? So when you do see him, it's like when we saw each other again, it was like we'd seen each other just yesterday. You know, it was no different. You know, actually, they say it says somewhere in the Lam Rim, it says, I think, that it's best not to be right next to your teeth. You know, so there's like all these, you know, they say the best distance into, this is from old Tibet, right? The best distance from your teacher is one mountain away. And the reason is that if you're always with your teacher, then you see him like on his daily routine, and then you kind of like, you know, you, what did they say? Familiarity breeds contempt, right? Kind of like that. You know, you kind of see him, you know, and then you kind of get like, doesn't look like a teacher, you know. Picking his nose, whatever, you know. That kind of thing. But then if you're a mountain away, you don't see all that stuff, right? So you have this glorified, idealized view of your teacher, but you see still close enough that you can, when you need advice, you can go talk to him, right? Ah, but we'll go to that. We'll get to that. How to think about the teacher as a Buddha. He's not human. Well, I mean, he is human, but he's not human. So, like that. Anyway.
Perhaps you'll get to this in other classes, but I'm wondering, I never thought about this before. Does your first teacher have to be your root teacher? I would imagine not. And does your root teacher know they're your root teacher? Do you know they're your root teacher? When do you figure this out?
Did you ask him, like, for marriage? Ask, you know, like, bend down on one knee, ask him?
I don't know. I don't have a teacher.
Right. So, you know, the first teacher does not, you know, first teacher does not have to be a root teacher. Sometimes it is, you know. Can it change?
I mean, like, if you have a teacher and you think this is wonderful.
Yeah.
And then you have another teacher. I mean, they may be equal, in which case neither of them might be your root teacher. But, I mean, how do you come about this decision?
It just happens. I mean, how do you choose a husband?
Not well.
Well, I don't know. So, or a dog for that matter. I don't know, you know. But what? It is a process. And the thing is that, and we'll talk about how to choose a teacher, because one doesn't go about and just choose a teacher willy-nilly, because there are very specific things that one should look for in a teacher, you know, because, you know, they have to have certain qualities for us to choose them as a teacher. So that'll be next class. But whether or not a teacher is a root teacher depends on what your relationship is like with him, right? So, you know, sometimes you may not, if the two of you are communicating in different languages, well, that's a pretty clear, you know, obvious way. You know, if you have a hard time communicating with him, then probably not a root teacher. You know, it's going to be harder to be a root teacher. Let's put it that way, right? Simple things like that. Other things are, you know, some teachers you just have a different, you know, you just have a different bond, you know? And it's just more natural. You feel more natural around them, right? Like that, you know. So like that. That's how you kind of come to that conclusion, you know.
Well, I may have more questions as the class goes on.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah. But I went on a long-winded it's 8:30 already, but I was just going to say is that I went on a long-winded explanation of why one needs a spiritual teacher. Did it make sense? Yeah. Don't be scared. You know, I mean, most of you, I expect, don't have a spiritual teacher, and it's okay. It doesn't mean that you are forsaken, you know? It just means that each of us has to be, the whole, you know, Buddhism, all spiritual journeys are processes, right? It's a process. I mean, we can put deadlines and goals and all that stuff, but they are ephemeral at best, you know? You could say, by 2 years from now, I will have a teacher. But it doesn't mean anything, right? It's not like, you know, 2 years from now, I'll have a college degree in this, right? It's not like that. You know, it's a process. It's a journey. The most important thing for us is to just make sure just we remember what we're trying to achieve, you know, and why, what is our motivation, why we're trying to do it, right? And if we keep that motivation in our mind and we continue to make progress, and like the bucket, right, continue to just put little drops of water, every single time. You know, if we accumulate, you know, they say if you accumulate merit, right? That's the accumulation of merit, right? Through generosity, through patience, through all those qualities, you know, all the things they talk about, right? If you continue to accumulate merit, to put those drops in the bucket, things just happen. And that's all that matters. But it's important to know to why we should have a teacher. You know, that so that we when we're there, we're ready, right? When the, you know, so that we can be ready when the opportunity arises. So, okay, so let's finish with the dedication. So, whatever merit we've collected by being here, by thinking about this, our journey, our spiritual journey, by thinking about the teachers, by thinking about accumulating merit, by thinking about our mental delusions, may we attain our goals, our ultimate goals. May all beings achieve their ultimate goals because they're just like us. And may all of us get to the final stage quickly through a spiritual teacher. Thank you very much. See you next time.